When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, we roll on with our season previews. We got a new guest tonight.
We do. We're on to Louisville. Mark Ennis of The Drive on 93.9 The Bill is joining us. Mark, first time on the show. Welcome.
I love that it's the Basketball Conference. Like, it's so great. Football podcasting in the Basketball Conference. It's so great. Thank you, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm mostly just glad that you get it because I live in, total honesty here. Like, I live in Texas and I tell people I host this podcast and what it's called, and I get a lot of funny looks. They do not get it.
Get an ACC country.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's great. That's fantastic.
Well, Mark, thank you for joining us here. Welcome to the show. As Mike said, looking forward to talking about Louisville here tonight in 2021. And to start out with a lot of these programs, we kind of talk about kind of quote unquote the state of the program. But gosh, Louisville is just in an interesting spot here, it feels like. And it's been a hell of a roller coaster going back to what, like 2016. I mean, you have Lamar win the Heisman all the way to bottoming out in 2018 under Petrino, and then the upswing in 2019 under Satterfield's first year, and then last year where the record probably looked a little bit worse than it realistically was. And then at the very end of the season, Satterfield is like job hunting, and that turned into a little bit of a mini crisis. Like, just in general, like where are we at with this coaching staff and the program? Like, how are we feeling about things in Louisville right now?
Well, I mean, you didn't exaggerate any of that. It's the nature of the Louisville job. Since 1965, they've had one coach stay longer than 5 years. Like, they just, wow. If you look at it, it's the complete opposite of basketball, where you had basically two Hall of Famers back to back over a 40 something year period, and Louisville can't get one football coach to stay 5 years. And it's, people have been dying for that. And I think the real jarring nature of last year was the feeling like he left App State. You know, it was his alma mater. It's the only place he'd really ever been, and only ever been a head coach. Surely he left intentionally for this place. And then after 2 years was involved in the South Carolina search, I think I've kind of come to see, I don't really know how much Scott really wanted that job, but I think he was kind of naive. And I remember having a conversation with him where he's like, I thought I was going to that meeting at the kind of the prodding of my agent, Jimmy Sexton. And I think Scott's a terrible Jimmy Sexton client. yeah. He's like, I thought I was going to this meeting for them to sell me on the job. And now here it's come out, and but you interviewed for the South Carolina job, and we're mad at you. And it seemed very unnecessary. And it really, I think, unfortunately for him, it burned up what was as high of an approval rating as a first year guys had in a long time, because not only did they go from 2-10, you know, to 8-5, but they did it in a way that people love. Like, he was a lot nicer. They, you know, he is a PR dream, and just in terms of son of the aw shucks. And it's just the complete opposite of Petrino. And to have just kind of spent it all on the heels of a year where it's like, okay, we're used to this around here, but not after 2 years, and not when you got worse. And now I think he's in this weird position where I think people don't think he's a bad coach, but now, like, normally winning cures everything. But for him now, winning will just make people more suspicious, because then they'll be back on people's radars and it'll make sense. So, I mean, his only out really is to just not leave. I mean, there's no way to fast forward through it. You can't, you know, he's got to have off seasons now if he wants to sell people on this. Well, they've got to keep winning, but then he's got to have off seasons where we don't hear about him. And that's sort of what people are just going to hold their breath until they get it.
Yeah, when Jeff Brohm didn't take the job a few years ago and they hired Satterfield, I told Joey, I was like, I think this is a pretty good hire for Louisville. And he comes in and they had that opener against Notre Dame, and you know, they actually looked functional after that 2-10 season and looked competitive for a half against a good Notre Dame team, and then had a really good season after that. I'm thinking, all right, Louisville is kind of maybe A, they weren't as bad as, you know, everybody thought they were in the last year of Petrino, but B, this is definitely the right coach for them. And they actually had a home run type hire after, and I hate that term, it's so over exaggerated, but they had, you know, they hit the hire that they needed to hit after missing on Jeff Brohm. And then last year happens, and then the weird offseason, I don't want to call it a coaching search, but he's just like kind of going around, just kind of soliciting. It seemed like he was soliciting jobs a little bit. It's like, why? Why would you do that?
Well, I think the fact that that's like your first reaction is with the way a lot of fans looked at it, that this, like, this was unnecessary.
Right.
You know, like, this is an unforced error, especially, you know, when Bobby Petrino kind of whored out for jobs the first time he was here, it was LSU, you know.
Right.
It was Auburn. You know, it wasn't South Carolina. Like, none of it really seemed to make a lot of sense. And that's, to me, honestly, it's the reason why I believe him when he's like, actually, I was kind of a rube for my agent. I shouldn't have done that. Like, that actually makes the most sense out of it. But I think they look at it and they're like, please just forget about that. We're the guys that went 8-5 in the first year. And it just, you can't do that. This happened. But I don't think you could add to it, by the way, a couple of assistant coaches, you know, leaving in the offseason. Now, all of them, I mean, Dwayne Ledford almost got the Marshall job, and then now he's an offensive line coach in the NFL. Like, no one can blame any of it.
Right.
Shadon Brown became a co-defensive coordinator. Like, they were moves. But when you put it all together, it was like, people are trying to get out of here. They know he's trying to get out of here. And unfortunately, it wasn't what was happening. And he's got to handle it better next time. That's his problem, not ours.
Yeah, it largely ends up being a PR mess. And like you said, I was confused because, like, is South Carolina realistically a better job than Louisville? Like, it feels lateral, if anything, to me.
It's a tough job.
Yeah, exactly. Mark, let's talk a little bit about Louisville coming into this fall in particular. And, I mean, for a team and a program and a coaching staff that's really looking to have a bounce-back year, offensively, it's a bit of a tough situation having lost your three of your biggest producers last year in Javian Hawkins, Tutu Atwell, Des Fitzpatrick. On the other hand, you bring back Malik Cunningham. We're going with Malik. Mm-hmm. Okay. Malik Cunningham comes back. He's a third-year starter. He's a guy who's really flashed and had some really great games in the past, but last year turnovers in particular were a pretty big deal. Is there any question about whether that job is in jeopardy with Cunningham, or is it his to lose at this point?
I mean, it's definitely his, which is interesting because I think they would have liked – for this offseason, for him to be pushed, you know, by Christian McCaffrey, who was going to transfer in from Nebraska. I think they were going to give him a chance. But I will say, I think to Malik's credit, and he is kind of permanently Malik, just so we know, I think that he, in the offseason, I think sort of recommitted himself in such a way that by the time Christian McCaffrey got here, he didn't think he could win the job.
Luke McCaffrey.
And so, yeah, Christian McCaffrey, that was coming from Nebraska.
Luke McCaffrey.
He was here for like a week and then went to Rice, you know?
Yeah.
It's wild. But, you know, I think Malik's first year was kind of magical. And, you know, he was like one pass shy of qualifying for finishing second in the nation in pass efficiency. It was wild how efficient he was. And then I think last year he spent a lot of time doing a little bit too much and had incredibly ill-timed, crushing fumbles. Like, I swear to you – some fumbles are just a whole lot worse than others. And he had a lot of those. And then in David Hale's pointed this out a bunch of times now, it's hard to find a team that played seven games that were within one score going into the fourth quarter and you lose six. And most of them in almost exactly the same kind of crippling fashion. So they probably weren't as bad as it looked record wise by the end of last year, but you're not guaranteed good luck in that regard. And they lost those games.
I mean, what do you think the, And I'm looking at this offense, and certainly there's still talent. Satterfield is recruited well enough in his first couple of years. There's certainly talent. It seems like it's a tough ask of Cunningham, though, given what he's lost on offense. who are some guys to kind of watch out for on that side of the ball, both in the pass catching roles and of course at running back, where Hawkins was just a really good player for Louisville. It's a tough guy to replace in the backfield.
Yeah, I think the good news for Louisville is they got a little bit of a dry run the last couple of games of the year. Once Tutu Atwell got hurt against Boston College and he was done, they really began to kind of experiment, you know, wide receiver, and played Syracuse, played Wake Forest in that finale. That Wake Forest game is, they should do a 30 for 30 on who had to play in that game for both teams. I mean, there were two games this year. This is just a total aside. Scott, when they played Virginia Tech, they found out the morning of the game that the whole defensive line was out.
Yeah.
And he was like, we called guys at home that had not dressed all year. Come to the game, you have to play. and they end up losing that game by a touchdown. Wake Forest, the same thing. They find out on Thursday, like half the offensive line's out, and they have a freshman. They're like, you're the center this week, and you're starting. And he's like, I haven't practiced center this year. I've never practiced center.
Yeah.
And they did that at wide receiver and a couple other spots. I think there are positions where I think they're not sure who the people are. Or they're not sure if they have them. I think safety, after the starters, they'll worry if there's people there. I think wide receiver, it's a little different. I think they feel like they've got people. They just don't know who it will be that kind of emerges once the game starts. And truth is, nobody knew Tutu Atwell was that when Scott got here. He was good. And I think Scott's – the number one thing I think he's shown is some flexibility. You know, he is not an air-it-out guy, but he inherited a team that could run behind Mekhi Becton and air it out. And that's what they did. And so I think you'll see him be flexible like that this year. But I think the skill positions, the running backs are in a lot better spot than wide receivers until we find out who shows up. So Jalen Mitchell was awesome against Wake Forest and Syracuse kind of down the stretch after Javion Hawkins opted out. And I think he's going to be the next guy that carries the ball 20-something times a game. And I think they'll supplement around him, but he will step into Hawkins' role. He is not as fast as Javion Hawkins. He is not, but he's a battering ram. He's a very strong, good at this scheme. And then I think one of the things you'll see them try to do this year to kind of offset the wide receivers being so raw, they're going to throw to the backs way more than they ever did. You know, his first couple of years, they've got real burners at running back. And I think they're going to try to use that throwing the ball too.
Mark, as a quick little aside here, while we're talking about having guys, but not really sure who's going to break out, I feel like since Satterfield's been in place at Louisville, the recruiting has not been like lighting the world on fire kind of thing. Yep. And I don't think you hire Scott Satterfield because he's going to recruit lights out. You hire him because he's a great scheme guy. He's a great program builder, those kinds of things. Is there any concern about the level of recruiting that's happened there? Or does it seem like it's sufficient for where this program wants to go?
No, I think there's definitely concern in that, like, everyone, I think most people understand Louisville's always going to have guys that are the coach is just asking you kind of trust me on this guy, you know, and Scott's obviously, I think, an extremely good evaluator for some of the people that, you know, become great under him. They're complete nobodies, you know, out of high school and stuff, but your whole class can't be like that. And I think that's the thing is like there, I think there are maybe more what look like reaches or more like, hey, just trust me on this one. There are more of those than I think people are comfortable with. And I think the biggest problem for Scott is quarterback recruiting. You know, to lose Chuba Purdy on signing day that first year and just kind of look like you got big time by Florida State, that stung. And then the other quarterback in that class transferred out after 1 year, and Christian McCaffrey showed up and left. And so they really haven't replaced Malik Cunningham yet, for whoever will be kind of the guy in the future. And so I think generally maybe, yes, I think there are some concerns, but he's also shown his evaluative skills with some guys. And then at quarterback, it's until – like Louisville's history, they punched so far above their own weight at quarterback, like for decades with the Brahms and Redmond and LaFours and Browning Nagel, Teddy Lamar. Like it's what they do. And Scott hasn't done well at quarterback there, and it's kind of weird to watch that happen.
Offensive line's returning a bunch, and they get Brian Hudson from Virginia Tech, which I'm a Tech alum. Brian Hudson's a good player. You're getting a really good offensive lineman there. This offensive line, I mean, you know, we talk about playmakers and, you know, who's going to produce on the outside and stuff like that, but Cunningham's going to have time to throw. There are going to be holes opened up in the running game. I mean, I feel like Louisville fans got to be pretty happy with the state of the offensive line.
Yeah, that's been, of all the places, like this is the inverse of quarterback. like from the day they arrived, he said, we need to have 15 linemen. We have five, like the first, you know, his first to spring. He's like, we've got five. And by the time the fall got here, they had seven. It was like that. Well, now I think they feel like they've got about 12, you know, and depth, good depth. The Brian Hudson coming in, they're bringing back some super seniors. And the guy that's on Feldman's freak list, I thought he would play more last year. They love Trevor Reeves, a junior college tackle that they brought in last year. Is this hilariously athletic guy. He's up to 310 now. And every, like, I always like to ask defensive guys, like, who do you kind of hate in practice? Who do you, you know, who stands out? And it's more and more you hear about him. It should be the strength of the team and the strength of the offense in particular this year. And they made a change there, you know, that with Ledford leaving for the NFL, but they have loved Jack McNally, who came from Auburn, the offensive line coach, kind of an older school guy, but they seem to respond positively. I think they're going to be downright good this year, and I think they're going to need it.
Yeah, the offense can only be so bad if you have decent quarterback play and a really good offensive line.
Well, if you had Scott, like if you have one area where you don't have guys or you have big questions, he'd probably set it up just like this.
Yep.
Give me an experienced quarterback, give me some deep running backs, and give me an offensive line, and I'll make the receivers open.
Figure it out.
We do, and yep. Yeah, and I think yep. That's what he's got.
Yep.
I remember those first couple games watching some of the ways that he was getting Tutu Atwell open and just noticing, like, he knows what he's doing with his personnel. He figures it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and he's been flexible. You know, I think there are his scheme overall, we're going to run inside outside zone and we're going to run every imaginable fake kind of off of it to where you never really know. There is not a Tutu Atwell guy on this roster in terms of like open field, make people miss, that sort of thing. But they do love Tyler Harrell. He's kind of waited his time, but he's a legit 4-2 guy. He's like a, you know, all-state kind of track guy. He's extremely fast straight ahead. And I think they'll try to come up with some of that side-to-side stuff from other people. But that's the deep guy to watch for this year.
Mark, I'm interested to talk about the defense here because there were a couple of guys over on that side of the ball that were real mainstays. Guys like Dorian Etheridge, Rajay Burns, who had been there for a long time, that are no longer going to be there. And it's been weird because I remember Scott Satterfield coming over and bringing Brian Brown with him, and they had good defenses at App State for quite a while, and yet, especially last year, they struggled. And like you said, I mean, there were plenty of games with COVID and this, that, and the other where, you know, you're missing guys unexpectedly, last minute, all that. But even missing some of these guys that have been there for a while, I almost kind of expect the defense to take a jump. It's like you can't play for Brian Brown for all that long without getting a lot better, in my mind.
No, I think that he kind of gave away at Sunday when they reported the camp and had the first practice and everything. He said, we finally have enough guys and we finally have enough familiarity to where we get to do everything now. You know, I think so Louisville had to be a little more basic than he wanted to be. And they've been sound, but they certainly haven't been extravagant. They haven't forced a lot of turnovers. They haven't pressured the quarterback much, but they've gotten over 2 years. David Hale tweeted this out a couple of weeks ago, but like on drives, fire funny, on drives that didn't come from a turnover. So drives where either Louisville had to punt or Louisville kicked off. They were 41st in like defensive efficiency last year. And that's a miracle compared to what they walked into. Right. And the problem for Louisville was the least opportune turnovers by its own offense, you know, imaginable a year ago. But they had their moments. Miami was like the pants you got caught with your pants down. Like it was an atrocious game, and one safety little just kept messing up everything. And after that, it was like they sort of got the message, you know, held Notre Dame to 12. Like they defended a whole lot better, really, the rest of the year when they were close to healthy. And now I think they feel like they've got some areas where they've got a lot more bodies than they ever used to, and some areas where they just feel really good. And so even though, you know, like Dorian Etheridge is out, Monty Montgomery and CJ Avery, like they are elated about middle linebacker. They think they're going to be great. I think at corner, they're going to be great. And the question will be, can they finally let that last piece is, you know, Scott had incredibly good defensive lines at App State, and it was all guys that were like 6'3", 245, but they were relentless pass rushers. Those guys haven't emerged here, and it's made Louisville be a lot more conservative, I think, than they'd like to be. But I think they have them this year. We just don't know. We haven't seen it yet.
Kind of a two-pronged question here, you know, talking about the defensive line. So the defense as a whole gave up almost 180 yards per game on the ground last year. And then I look at kind of the passing down situation. So Louisville's sack rate on standard downs, first down, second and seven or fewer, third and four or fewer, was 8%, which was 12th in the FBS. Their sack rate on passing downs, though, was 103rd in the FBS at 5.4%. What do you attribute that to? That's just kind of a very weird split for me.
I completely agree with that. But it's the single biggest issue with this defense, because not only did they not get pressure, I think they felt the need to be awfully basic defensively because of the secondary. And so they don't have great natural pass rushers. Then they really can't do the things where you sort of generate pressure by what you do instead of who it is. And teams, I mean, it was infuriating at times to just watch teams. It was 3rd and 8. Like, I thought they were going to get it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just because Louisville had to be so basic. And I think Brian Brown, I cannot wait. He's like, they love the starting 4-5 or so in the defensive backfield. And they think that they're going to be free to blitz way more than they have either of his first 2 years. And if so, maybe some of that will go away. But I mean, I'm not shocked by any of those stats. That is exactly what it looked like over and over again last year.
Mike, I'm going to move on to the schedule here. Stop me if you've got anything else before we do that.
You're good, man.
Mark, I'm curious looking at this schedule, you know, just from a high level, I generally feel like Louisville is one of the quote unquote wild cards or high variance teams that this could end up in a lot of very different places this year. And I think honestly, one of the least opportune parts of the schedule is late. After the Clemson game, you've got probably your two biggest layups in conference in Syracuse and Duke. But I question, you know, if things haven't gone well up until then, where do the players find their mindset at? And really where my question is going here is there a chance with kind of what happened at the end of last season, Satterfield job search and that kind of thing, is there a chance that this ends up with Satterfield gone like late in the season before they even get a chance to have a couple of those layups late season?
I'd be shocked. You know, if the morale part of it seems to be like not an issue. In fact, at ACC football kickoff, like the players kept saying, like around the facility and in the offseason and stuff, like it feels like 2 years ago. So like when things were started to go south in 2018, like I knew Bobby was getting fired, and the players and like their moms and dads would start like DMing me and be like, this guy, you know, like I knew everything was rotten. It was going to fall apart, and it did. And this is not, it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't seem like that, but I do think you're right. The first three games of Eastern Kentucky in between Ole Miss and UCF, those are not, none of those, well, Eastern, the two FBS games will be difficult. I think 1-2 to start the season would be difficult to sort of maintain some positive momentum. I feel like it's critical they go 2-1 to start the season. And I think that means beating UCF, because I think Ole Miss is just going to be incredibly fun and put up a bazillion points. Lane Kiffin's sort of in the zone right now.
Yeah, I was going to say the total in that Ole Miss game might be like 80.
So he says last year they didn't play defense and they're starting safety, like just transferred out. Like, it's a great game to have to break in a bunch of new players because they're not any good either.
Yeah. Sorry, Joey.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know what the spread is in that game, but I can't wait to bet the over, and it doesn't matter what it'll be.
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Hammering the over.
You know, you will kind of enjoy this though. Brian Brown came on the show a couple of weeks ago and I asked him, I was like, you know, Nick Saban just said basically like you can't stop people anymore anyway. And everyone knows Lane Kiffin's offense is going to be really good. I was like, do you feel kind of free? Just like go for what? Like, we can do whatever we want. I'm going to score anyway. Like, maybe we can just, you know, back away. And he's like, yeah, we actually do. He's like, we can be kind of exotic as we want because the expectation, they're really good. They scored 50 something points on Alabama last year.
Yeah, like that was crazy.
He's like, it's going to be like that. Let's just see if we can get as wild as we want to be and see if maybe we can come up with something that just sort of jams all the gears. And he said he's looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
Just playing with house money. There you go.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the funny thing looking at this whole schedule is, like, let's just be real here. There's only one game on here that I see that's really not particularly winnable, and that's Clemson. That's the game that's not particularly winnable for anybody they play, except maybe week one. But other than that, I mean, I see 11 games that at worst are a toss-up. And so, again, that kind of goes with that theme of, you know, high variance, kind of a wild card team, is that this could end up in a lot of different places. I mean, I could realistically see anything between, I don't know, I'm not going to go all the way down to 3-9, but we'll say 4-8 and like 9-3, yeah, depending on how well they bounced back from last year.
Yeah. Well, and that's what last year was. In fact, that's the kind of the study of his first year, is you go from 8-5 to 4-7. And the only thing that really changed was how often you turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. And I think, like we had Chris Cotter on the show, that like he said basically like Clemson looks like a loss, and every other game is like 40% win probability to 60% win probability, and it's basically just like who's going to sort of, you know. And I think that that's true of NC State. I think it's true of Boston College. I think it's true of Virginia. Like I think it's a bunch of teams in this league that are just solidly sort of in the middle, and every game is just going to be the most marginal of things until somebody starts to pull away. And I don't think that's happening this year.
Yeah, Joey and I have done these season previews, and I feel like I've said 7-5 for like every team we've previewed.
Well, it's like the whole conference is the Coastal.
Yeah, it's a total mess.
Go ACC.
And yeah, and I'm looking at this schedule, and I feel like there's Joey and tell me if you disagree. I feel like there's now a running theme where we go from like middle of September to like second weekend October. And I feel like that's the pivotal part of almost every ACC team's schedule this year. I'm looking at this, like you mentioned, that UCF game, first year head coach situation, probably the more winnable of those two early FBS non-conference games, at Florida State, at Wake, home against Virginia right after that. That's going to really determine the course of Louisville's season, I think. That's a really important three-game conference stretch, I think, Mark.
Oh, I think you're 100% right. And I think maintaining – I mean, they beat the hell out of Florida State a year ago.
Yeah.
But Florida State is definitely, you know, still recruiting much better than them. I think sort of staying on top of them while you can is important for Louisville. And that again, that early season stretch, I don't know how – like, I don't know the goodwill – if they start poorly and then sort of run off a bunch of wins that people don't really care too much about.
Right.
I mean, the good news for Scott is the Kentucky game, they got to play well in that one.
Yeah.
But that's a different animal. No, I think the three games after that opening stretch are where everything happens. And again, if they start well, I mean, they could be a 9-win team. And yeah, it's really as much of a reflection on the other opponents as it is any kind of sort of radical improvement, you know, on their part.
Mark, I'm curious to hear your take on the criticality of the Kentucky game at this point. You know, they've lost 3 out of 4 to Kentucky. And I know there are certain jobs out there that like really hone in on one opponent. I'm a Georgia Tech alumnus up until recently when, you know, Georgia has just become this astronomical, unbeatable thing. Like there was a lot of, you know, job success that was related to, can you beat Georgia or not? Is it that kind of that same way with Louisville and Kentucky, or is it a little bit less intense than that, would you say?
Oh, no, I think it's way up there, especially in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the city that I don't know that there are very many other cities, if any, that I can think of where the main city of one team is also the by far the biggest city in the state. It's the economic engine of the state, and tons of Kentucky grads move here. To where Louisville is an enormous city, and it's like 70-30 Louisville here. So everyone knows Kentucky fans. Everyone has family from out in the states, a Kentucky fan. You guy next to you at work is a Kentucky fan. You know, people that you park next to while you get gas, one's a Kentucky fan, and they're everywhere. And so it's a daily thing. And here, I don't know about Georgia Tech, Georgia, but here, like, there's still this whole, there's an ethos of, like, Louisville is kind of an upstart, even though they've been at this for so long. They're kind of an upstart. They're interlopers. Like, eventually this Louisville thing will go away. You know, they didn't want to play and didn't play in basketball till the 80s because Kentucky didn't want to, like, dignify Louisville. And that is the real life. Like, that's the ethos of the rivalry there is, like, you're not real. We're the team in charge of the entire state. Even though Louisville's won 3 national championships in basketball and has really beaten their asses in football far more often than reverse without, you know, 80 years of SEC head start. But that to me is like the driving thing is like, why are you even here? You shouldn't be here.
I like that SEC comment. Drive the knife in there, Mark. I like that.
They've had a big head start, not much to show for it.
Can't disagree. Joey, what do you think? What are we thinking here?
This is where I probably say 7-5, right?
I know.
I don't know. I have a weird feel. I kind of want to go 8-4.
Yeah.
Like, again, and we talked about this earlier as we were talking about Wake Forest, is this is where I look at the roster versus what they're playing, and it averages out to maybe 6-6, 7-5. But then I just know that this coaching staff has a number of guys that I trust and I believe in, and it's like that's what causes me to upgrade them a win. And it probably doesn't hurt that, like, Louisville's my second favorite team. So, like, at that point, you know, maybe I'm a little bit rose-colored glasses. But, yeah, let's go 8-4 here. I think they bounce back, and I think the pendulum swings back a little bit after some bad turnover luck last year. And, yeah, I think it's a pretty solid year back for Louisville.
Oh, man.
You're not on board with that, are you?
Well, I don't want to say I'm not on board with it. I can absolutely see it. That's the problem with this conference. I can see it. Like, I can absolutely see it. I think I'm going 7-5. And again, I think there's Joey, I agree with you. And Mark, you mentioned it as well. I think there's 9 win variability here. I think it would be hard for me to imagine them losing or winning less than 4 games. But I think it's like anywhere from 4 to 9, I think.
Yeah.
No, dealer's choice. I'm going to go 7-5. I feel like that with most of the conference. I'm going to stick with it here. I think it's a bounce back year for Satterfield. I am with that sentiment. I don't think it's going to bottom out as bad as some national folks think it is. Satterfield's a good coach. Year one was very, very good, and I was really impressed by that. And last year, I'm willing to write off as just a weird year in general. Again, off the field, taking interviews and stuff like that. You did that to yourself. You shot yourself in the foot. But on the field, I'm willing to give this staff a pass because, I they exceed expectations in year one. They regress to the mean a little bit in a really weird COVID year in year two when, you don't know who's healthy when. And, Mark, like you mentioned, they're calling offensive linemen, hey, you got to suit up. You never played this position before. Too bad you're starting. It was a weird year, so I'm willing to give him a pass. I'm going to say 7-5, and I could absolutely see it being better than that, but I just don't really have a pulse on, like, the middle part of this conference. It's going to be very, very weird.
Yep. Yeah, I picked them third in the Atlantic.
It's reasonable.
Preseason, and I was prepared for them to go be anywhere from third to sixth, I think they're going to go 8-4. I think they're going to lose to Ole Miss. I think they're going to lose to Clemson. I think they're going to lose to Kentucky, and then there'll be a game where they don't fall. Florida State on the road, maybe Virginia on the road, maybe Virginia always plays them maddeningly close. They've all been close games in both directions. So I think they'll lose four, and it won't. I mean, they outgained 4 teams they beat. Or they lost to a year ago, excuse me. Like, it just doesn't – it won't take much for literally all of those to be wins this year. And then I think they'll go 8-4, and then I think it's really up to Scott to make hay with that.
Yeah.
The quiet offseason, a good – it's going to be a super small recruiting class just because they have so many of the super seniors and stuff. But another good year in the transfer portal, stuff like that. And then I think people will be calm and things will be sort of resettled, and the middle year will look like the outlier. Anything less than that, I think there'll be another offseason of kind of debate, but it would still be an improvement.
I love it. Mike, I think that's all I got from Mark. Anything else?
Yeah, I think so too. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Your debut, the inaugural podcast with us. We appreciate you jumping on.
Happy to. Anytime, guys.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to having you on sometime again soon. Again, this has been great. So thank you so much. And look forward to having you on again sometime soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. All right, Mike, that was Mark Ennis, once again, of 93.9 The Ville in Louisville. And Mark, by the way, this is also the part where I usually say, would you like to tell the people where to find your stuff real quick?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Mark Ennis, and 93.9theville.com is the website. You can listen to catch podcast of the show there 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. So appreciate it, guys.
The Drive from 3 to 6, 93.9 The Ville. Go check him out. Mike, now that's all I've got. We're going to get out of here. We're going to go preview some more teams. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at FTRSJoey. He's at Mike McDaniel, SOS. Together, we're at BC Podcast ACC. And once again, he is at Mark Ennis, all one word, on Twitter. Go follow him for all sorts of great Louisville content and beyond. All sorts of good stuff there. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, all sorts of good places. Please hit that subscribe button, hit the follow button, all those things that YouTubers tell you to do. We appreciate that as well. Mike, you want to tell them real quick where they can find us on the social medias?
Yes, sir. Facebook, Facebook, facebook.com/basketballconference. Find all of our podcasts there. Instagram is where I was at, and that's where my mind was at. Instagram at BC Podcast ACC, Joey.
We're almost done with these previews, I promise.
We're getting there.
Finally, you can send us an email with your questions, comments, concerns to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
We nailed that part.
There we go. We got it right this time. Mike, I think that's all I got. You want to come back and keep previewing some teams?
Only a few more left, Joey.
Only a few more. We're almost there. All right. Well, until next time, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, Mr. Mark Ennis, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. And until then, go ACC.